So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, Text 16. Adam, ante, cha, madye, cha, srijat, srijam, yad, anviyat, punas, tat, Pratishankrami yach chiseta tad eva sat adavante cha madye cha srijat srijam yad anviyat punastad pratishankrami Yachchisyeta tadeva sat. Dab ante chamadye cham. Srijat srijam yad anviyat. Punastad pratisankrami. Yachchisyeta tadeva sat. Adavante cha madye cha Srijat srijam yad anviyat Punastad pratisankrame Yachchisyeta tadeva sat Adavante cha madye cha Synonyms, word meanings, adao, in the causal stage, ante, in the termination of the causal function. Chan, also. Madye, in the phase of maintenance. Chan, also. Srijat, from one production. Srijam, to another production. Yat, which. Anviyat, accompanies. Puna, again. Tat, of all material phases, Pratisankrame, in the annihilation, yat, which, Sisheta, remains, tat, that, eva, indeed, sat, the one eternal. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Commencement, termination, and maintenance are the stages of material causation. That which consistently accompanies all these material phases from one creation to another and remains alone when all material phases are annihilated is the one eternal. Please repeat. Commencement, termination, and maintenance are the stages of material causation. That which consistently accompanies all these material phases from one creation to another and remains alone when all material phases are annihilated is the one eternal. Purport. The Lord here reiterates that the one supreme personality of Godhead is the basis of unlimited material variety. Material activity is a chain of cause and effect relationships by which innumerable objects are produced. A particular material effect is converted into its subsequent cause, and when the causal phase is terminated, the effect disappears. This part of the purport, it's not easy. So the reasoning, at least for me, I'm not going to try to figure everything out here. And when the causal phase is terminated, the effect disappears. Fire causes firewood to burn to ashes, and when the causal function of fire is finished, the fire itself, which was the effect of a previous cause, is also terminated. The simple fact is that all material objects, are created, maintained, and ultimately annihilated by the supreme potency of the Lord. And when the entire field of material cause and effect is withdrawn, so that all cause-effect relationships vanish, the personality of Godhead remains in his abode. Therefore, although innumerable objects may function as causes, they are not the ultimate or supreme cause. Only the personality of Godhead is the absolute cause. Similarly, although material things may exist, that could be a five-hour discussion just then. Material things may exist. Do they exist or not? They do not always exist. Can something exist if it doesn't always exist? The personality of Godhead alone has absolute existence. By the process of jnana, or knowledge, one should understand the supreme position of the Lord. Translation again, commencements, termination, and maintenance are the stages of material causation. That which consistently accompanies all these material phases from one creation to another and remains alone when all material phases are annihilated is the one eternal. Om Gyanatimidanda Shajananjana Shalakya Chakshur Militangena Tajma Shri Gurve Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. Introductory remarks. I'll be doing a little reading of what I wrote and also some extemporaneous. I always make this announcement. If it sounds like I'm reading, it's because I'm probably because I am actually reading. So please allow me a little of that. There's three levels of discourse of making a speech. One is called impromptu, one is called extemporaneous, and one is called reading. Each one is more and more, like, restricted, you might say. Well, the class I gave on Monday was about as impromptu as you can possibly. It was off the scale, impromptu, you could say. So I'm not going to go from one extreme to the other. I would mention that there is... We're getting into a neighborhood here of a lot of deep philosophy. So for some of you, it'll be music to your ears. For others, it'll be a cacophony. But I think there'll be something for everybody, I hope. We will attempt to pull together several concepts usually treated in isolation one from another. These will include the real versus the unreal, substance versus shadow, so to speak, the concept of causality and the cause-effect relationship, as well as the necessity of invoking a, quote, two-tiered structure of philosophical deliberation, meaning dividing the whole study into the lower versus the higher level of understanding. Yes, we'll be getting into deep water, maybe a bit over our heads, maybe dealing with some tentative proposals. But if we can get a glimpse of a, quote, new light, that would be great. Blessings, please. So, first topic is this idea of causality. We're hearing a lot in these verses about causes and different kinds of causes. Bhagavad Gita, of course, talks about five factors of action. Gets into the whole discussion. Are we the doer? Are we not a doer? Are we a cause? Are we not a cause? But it clarifies things a little bit in this section of Bhagavatam, where we're getting a sharp distinction between the one real cause, which is Krishna, who is Krishna, and the kind of causes that are part of the mechanism of the material cosmic manifestation, the causes and effects. You can get it gets into the whole subject of free will and determinism, and oh, there's so many ramifications, so we're not going to go everywhere. So Sahoja Swami left us some wonderful literature. Perhaps his best well-known book is, most well-known book is Substance and Shadow. So in that he explains a little bit about kinds of causes. Historically, okay, here it goes. Aristotle proposed four causes, and he gives the Greek translation of that, which I won't. Reasons for something happening to explain how creation occurs. These are the material, formal, efficient, and final causes. Something created must have substance. That substance is the material or ingredient cause, causa materialis. Something created must have shape. That shape is the formal cause, causa formalis. Creating something is an act, and that act must be initiated. That which initiates creation is the efficient cause, causa efficiens. Something created must have a purpose. That purpose is the final cause, causa finalis. In modern language, it's called teleology, the idea that there's some purpose to everything, and looking for that purpose. Any realistic plan of creation must account for these four causes. Now, the nomenclature gets shifted around according to who's analyzing causes, so that was Aristotle's, of course, translated into English. Srila Prabhupada himself, in Renunciation Through Wisdom, also recognizes several types of cause. So I'm reading from this, I guess, early book of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, did he write this before he came to the West, Renunciation Through Wisdom, or is that...
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sarva Bhavana, Sarva Bhavana translated them, and then Bhakti Kusami went and checked the Bengali translation, and I came back and did a little touch at the end.
Wow. I asked the right person. Renunciation Through Wisdom is, now you have the history of the book. Thank you. So here's a little excerpt from it, quite pertinent, I believe, to the subject matter this morning. The perfect analogy is as an earthen pot. What is needed to manufacture an earthen pot are clay, a potter's wheel, and a potter. The clay is the material or ingredient cause of the pot. The wheel is the instrumental or efficient cause. Notice the nomenclature shifts, but the concepts remain. The wheel is the instrumental or efficient cause, and the potter is the prime cause. Similarly, while the material energy is both the ingredient and efficient cause of this cosmic creation, the Supreme Lord Krishna is the prime cause. Like a shadow, the material energy works strictly in accordance with the Supreme Lord's dictates. Chayeva yas bhuvana. So that's efficient cause. We can also, there's a term also, instrumental cause. It can also be used. Vedic Vaishnav Siddhanta, that's the right way of describing it. I write VVS, Vedic Vaishnav Siddhanta. Understanding is not all that different. For instance, we read that in Canto 4, Chapter 11, Text 17, "My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of the material cosmic manifestation. When he gives the impetus, many other causes and effects are produced. And thus the whole universe moves just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet." Now notice one thing that will be coming up as we discuss this is the other causes and effects are produced. We're talking about the cause of all causes, Krishna, but that cause of all causes also produces sequences of causes and effects. Cutting to the chase, that's a good thing to do, and following Chaitanya Charitamrita, we could concentrate on the two most general distinctions regarding causes. See, where we're going here is that there are, you can analyze very meticulously different types of causes, as has been done throughout the history of philosophy, and metaphysicians, and Aristotle did that. But for our purposes, it's not a level playing field. It's not like it's just different varieties. The cause of all causes is in a class by itself or himself. And that is, in one sense, the only real cause of everything. So, gatera nimitta hetu yaichi kumbhakara taiche jagatera karta purushavatara. Translation: just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter, so the creator of the material world is the first Purusha incarnation. Karana Navashai Vishnu. That's Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 63. The distinction between the immediate or material cause and the remote or ultimate cause is clearly and colorfully explained in terms of the Achagala Stana Nyaya as follows. Ataeva Krishna Mala Jagat Karana Prakriti Karana Yaiche Aja Galastana. Translation: therefore, Lord Krishna is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation. Prakriti is like the nipples on the neck of a goat, but they cannot give any milk. CC Adi 5.61. I think most of you have heard this analogy many times. It's kind of hard to forget it. It's very striking. And the whole idea is that it may appear that you can get milk from those kind of nipples, but don't waste your time. In the same way, it may appear that somehow, like the late Stephen Hawking, he was unfortunately, as time went on, he became more and more atheistic, and he was saying that you don't have to have any principle beyond matter. Matter can just auto-generates and something like that. Big Bang does the whole job of explaining what happened. Hello, who set the explosion? That's not science to ask a question like that. Anyway, I don't want to mimic him. He's now gone. But this is quite clear that the material energy may appear to be auto-generating and self-producing and independent, but it doesn't work like that. There has to be a cause beyond matter which is generating all material manifestations. Now, in the purport to this CC verse, I hope it's not offensive to say CC. Can we say that? It's okay. Srila Prabhupada makes use of the, quote, red-hot analogy in a different way from what we usually hear. The way we usually hear it is, if you put an iron in fire, it becomes red-hot, and it becomes dynamically the same as fire. Prabhupada would say, what do you think? Is it iron or fire? And well, it's still hard. It's got the same shape. It must be iron. Touch it. That's what you need. touch it. Oh, no, it's fire, it's fire. I told you. I mean, that's the way it is. So things we use in Krishna's service, like, you know, we can go into the whole thing about Yukta Vairagya and so many, it's a whole class about that. But Prabhupada's using this red hot example in a different way, which is relates to this morning's content class. In the purport to this verse, the verse about the Ajagala Nyaya, Stana Nyaya. Mahavishnu, the plenary expansion of Krishna, activates all the ingredients. It is in this way that material nature has the power to supply the ingredients. And we hear in Bhagavad Gita that the material nature is the cause of all material causes and effects. Or what is that, in the 13th chapter, 21st verse, also in the 9th chapter, 10th verse. The material nature seems to be a real doer. So how could dead matter, of course, Durga is not dead matter, but the energy itself, how could dead matter produce or do anything? And here Prabhupada's explaining how that happens. In and of itself, material nature has... It is in this way that material nature has the power to supply the ingredients. The example given is that the iron has no power to heat or burn. Doing pretty good, time-wise. But after coming in contact with fire, the iron becomes red hot and can then diffuse heat and burn other things. Material nature is like iron, for it has no independence to act without the touch of Vishnu, who is compared to fire. Lord Vishnu activates material nature by the power of his glance, and then the iron-like material nature becomes a material supplying agent, just as iron makes made red hot becomes a burning agent. And this connects things, no? Material nature cannot independently become an agent for supplying the material ingredients. See, we're going into a little bit greater depth here in terms of, material nature produces what? How does that happen? So here Prabhupada's explaining. It's that same analogy, but applied in a different context, that becoming red hot means it can act like fire. That's as in the other application of that analogy. But also here, that's how material nature becomes empowered. We usually hear the glance of Mahavishnu and the three modes become out of balance and that kind of thing. But still, the question still remains, how does material... We hear Srishti Stati Palarya Sadhana Shaktari Chayeva Yasya Bhupanani Vibhati Durga Ichtana Rupa Mabhyasya Chachastase. She conducts herself as a shadow under the will of Govinda. And yet at the same time, she gets a lot of credit. Srishti Stati Palaya, that she's involved in the creation, the maintenance, and annihilation. That's Durga Devi. So how does she get all that ability? And that's what we're talking about here. Now we go from the sublime to the ridiculous now. David Hume, using the logic of skepticism, tries to prove that we cannot logically establish any causation whatsoever. But such denial, especially when applied to the original cause of the universe, exposes the famous skeptic as shirking the philosopher's duty of dealing with origins, of answering the perennial conundrum, why is there something rather than nothing? For centuries, philosophers were challenged by that kind of question. Not theists, but leaning away from theism. Those are the kind of philosophers that would ask that kind of questions. For theists, it's no-brainer, it's a piece of cake, isn't it? We understand why there's something rather than nothing. Okay, and while we briefly focus on this gentleman... And he was a gentleman. By material standards, he was atheistic. He gave arguments, you know, you say he's a demon. But he was extremely, he was one of the most beloved philosophers in the history of philosophy. He was just very, very affable, very sociable, and everybody loved him. At the same time, he was what he was, philosophically. Have a little more about that. We may point out another of his denials, namely that there is what has been described in text 14 that we just heard recently, that it says, I personally approve of that knowledge, this is from the text, by which one sees the combination of 9, 11, 5, and 3 elements in all living entities. I think this was read yesterday. And ultimately, one element within those 28. So as we may recall, that verse is referring to the supersoul as the singular and ultimate continuous element. And today's verse also, this was alluded to. But the individual minute living entity is also the persistent and eternal identity who remains unchanged despite the mutability of the material energies surrounding him. One last point regarding cause and effect. Maybe it won't be the last point, but that's what I thought it was going to be. Bhagavad Gita 13:21 is quite interesting in this regard. Karya karana kartitve hetu prakriti ruchite parusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktrite hetu uchite. I missed the word there. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. That was the 13:21. But we are not shaktas, leaving off at this point. This is kind of repeating from a different angle what we were just discussing about the material energy's need for some underlying basis. Krishna has already explained that beyond, quote, nature, unquote, Durga Dev, there is himself. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Again, that very active role of the material energy, surprisingly enough. But at the same time, maya dikshena prakrit, iksha, the glance of the Lord. And again, it's not like the deists would put it, that we shouldn't be misled, that the Lord just glanced and that's it. He didn't do anything else after that. Then it was all under the aegis of Durga Devi. She has a lot to do, but at the same time, it's always overseen. Karma, what is that? Daivi karma na netrina yantra papadyate. What is it? Kanashya. We won't translate the whole verse, but the point there is that it's not just working of the laws of material nature like karma, but it's also always under divine direction. He's always in the background, and if you're very advanced, in the foreground. Krishna. Regarding the relationships, okay, here's another topic. Regarding the relationship between causality and existence, and that means, oh, this is going to be so dry. Do I have to listen to this? But it's actually thought-provoking. As was touched upon yesterday, in only one verse, Lord Krishna explained the entire philosophical study known as ontology. Now, I have to use that word a lot. If you're not sure what that means, and I mentioned before here, it's a philosophical topic of existence. What does it mean for something to exist? What is existence? What's real? What's really real? So, Lord Sri Krishna explained the entire philosophical study known as ontology to Arjuna in only one verse. Can anyone guess which verse that is? Bhagavad Gita? The whole ontology is there in one verse. Aham sarvasya prabhavam atatsum. Nasato vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha, ubayorda vijishtam tas, maniyas tatvadash. There it is. That, I should know the exact wording to that, because for me it's such a crucial verse, and it is a crucial verse, but help me, Jirita Prabhu, or somebody, the real English to that. Of that which is existing, there is no change. Of that which is not existing, which is asat, there's no duration. Seers of the truth have come to this conclusion by studying the nature of these two different ontological categories. One is real being, and the other one is just phenomenal. Kant would say the noumena and the phenomena. Phenomena are based on material designations. They're like Coca-Cola, for instance, is just a name. It's a world of names. That's phenomena. And the noumena in Kantian language is the thing in itself, what's really out there, not just what's coming into my senses and how I see things, but what's there. And we were touching on that yesterday. We spent some time, Dravida Prabhu allowed us to spend some time being focused on that. Stavada jangama deki na dekes pura murti sarvatra hayanicha ista deva spurti. That wonderful verse that the uttam adhikar, the very advanced devotee, he sees things. He doesn't always walk around with a white cane, although sometimes he can become a little materially dysfunctional due to his ecstasy. But normally he'll see things, the moving and the non-moving, but he doesn't exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he sees the energy of his istadev, of his worshipful deity, Krishna. And seeing Krishna, he becomes madly ecstatic. So that's nice to get to that point. So how does it relate to this sat and asat? That he's seeing sat, he's seeing the noumena, he's seeing the real noumena. And how we can get to that noumena from a simple logical analysis exercise, very easy. Hopefully we'll have time for that. We will have to get to that. So, let's see now. Okay. So he explained the whole ontology. There it is. It's such a simple solution. Philosophers like Heidegger and others, they went through all these contortions, trying to understand what is existence, what exists, what doesn't exist. But Krishna makes it so simple. For something to really exist, this is the rigorous definition. Yes, that's a whole topic. Prabhupada would sometimes say, often say, more often than not. And we do, we're formally connected with the Madhva Sampradaya, which espouses the material world is real, is a very important underpinning of their Siddhanta. So Prabhupada also, he would say, yes, it's real, but it's temporary. But I got news for you. I won't say bad news, but I have news for you that I can show you many quotes where Prabhupada would also say, not many, but in various conversations, he would say, like a devotee tried, oh, it's real, but temporary, right, Srila Prabhupada? And so, if it's temporary, how could it be real? Sorry about that. Now, it's not that Prabhupada is contradicting himself. It's just that sometimes he'll be basing it on the Siddhanta, the ultimate Siddhanta, which is a rigorous definition of what it means to exist. Means to exist mean if it's sat, it will never become asat. If it's sat, it will never be finished. It's forever. It's eternal. It's beyond time. That's sat. And we're part of that sat. I just want to comfort us with that reassurance. But at the same time, from a phenomenal point of view, from an experiential point of view, how could we say, I mean, of course, we're using this in Krishna's service, so it's like the iron rod in the fire, but even out there, I mean, what we see out there, we see we see some building, or we see a road, or we see a tree, it's hard to say, oh, that's not a tree, that doesn't exist. I mean, it's easy to say it, but it's hard to live like that. So for practical purposes, we do say it exists, but it's temporary. But from the rigorous definition, the Siddhanta is that these things are really not existing. For more evidence of that, we can go to Canto 2. Oh, what is it? Chapter, is it 223, the one about the world of names? Atak Kabir Nama Shuyavadatta Syadapramato Vyavasaya Buddhi Side Nyatarte Nayateta Tatra Samikshama Tatra. The one about the world of names. And the purport, Prabhupada would be very, very rigorous in this regard. He would just say, everything is just like the babbling of an ocean. Just it sounds almost like you know, I won't say Prabhupada's imitating Shakespeare. Shakespeare is imitating Srila Prabhupada. He said, this world is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And Prabhupada really gets a little existential like that in that purport, where he's just saying it's all meaningless. It's just a world of names, all the bungalows and war and peace and buildings and this and that. And, you know, it's all just nullified in a sense. Very strong on that negation of... that's without any reference to Krishna. Everything is really not really existing, therefore meaningless. In that sense. So, okay, the Sanskrit terms of 216 tell a whole story in this regard, for we find that its key terms, sat and asat, not only imply, quote, real or, quote, existence versus, quote, unreal or non-existent, but can be rendered as cause versus effect. Aha! It's getting interesting now. This is, we're hearing about causes and effect. And there's a direct relationship, even in the Sanskrit, between existing and not existing and cause and effect. And there it is. Cause is what's existing. And effect is what's not existing. Cause is sat, and effect is asat. Just see. And it gets worse or better. Depends if you're like philosophy. So every devotee is a philosopher. So, for we find that, okay, we just said, okay. Now, let's go to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11. How does that go? Kasmach chanena namaran mahatma kariyase, you know it, come on, somebody. Adi kartre, brahmano pyadi kartre. Ananta devesha jiganni vasha, and here it is, yat aksharam sadasach tach paramya. Did I write the translation here? I should have. Okay, real loud.
Oh, great one, greater even than Brahma.
Oh, for those on the radio. Oh, great one, greater even than Brahma.
You are the original creator.
You are the original creator.
Unto you.
Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you?
I got the mic now, should I just read?
All right.
O limitless one, God of gods, refuge of the universe, you are the inconceivable, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation.
Okay, now here's a little tricky part, is that in the word for word, in the synonyms, you have transcendental, and then you have sat asad, the causes to material causes and effect. I don't remember if the old translation actually put that into the translation, that transcendental to all material causes and effects. But we're back to that same theme, that Krishna is aksharam sadasat tat paramya. He's beyond all material causality and causes and effects. I think it's the point is clear that that cause is real, but then the problem is that causes become effect. Probably what we're hearing in today's section of Bhagavatam is going back from effect to down to cause, but I mean from cause to effect, but it also goes from, if you go backwards, it goes from effects to cause, and then a cause also has another cause. So then the cause becomes an effect, and it loses its potency, so to speak. Within the Maya Jagat, the material world, there's a constant interplay of the series of causes and effects.
This is part of Shrihatamara's book?
No, this is yours truly. But these are all illusory when seen from the transcendental perspective. We're not going to blame Sahutra Swami for these speculations. Hare Krishna. I'll read that again. Within the material world, there's a constant interplay of the series of causes and effects, but these are all illusory when seen from the transcendental perspective. Even the ethical context becomes minimized or transformed from that vantage point, as we find at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, which all make it very clear that material desires and ethical systems based on such desires are but mental concoctions. This is now getting into it. I mentioned in the introductory remarks something about the two-tiered idea. Now, in Western philosophy, a lot of philosophers, I mean, big names in philosophy, they also have kind of a two-tiered system. Like even Hume himself, he denies causality. He denies spirit. He denies, but then at the same time, they can't deny that we have to act nicely in this world. And he was very nice. He was very gentleman. So it's two-tiered. And we also have the two-tiered idea in with ethical application in this context. The Mayavadis have it with ontological application. They have it two-tiered, that everything is real. But within the lower understanding, you might think it's real. When you get more advanced, then you realize, and I hate to say it in front of the deities, how can I say it? But they say that even Krishna's not real. They say the whole system is there, it's all in place. That was Shankara's mission, get the Vedic culture back in place. But then ultimately, when you get to the higher tier, then you know that it's all Brahma. There's no variety. Okay. Bite my tongue, we shouldn't say that. But that's what they say. Now, in the ethical sphere, Hume was really into ethics. He was expecting. Kant also. He was saying we can't the nomina of soul questioning about reality, but at the same time, many philosophers, they invoke a reality to ethical considerations because you can't get away from it. So in one sense, it's sort of like compromising the rigorous definitions that we're talking about. We have to move a little quicker now. So I was reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita that, so in Bhagavad Gita also at the beginning, Arjuna's considerations of good and bad, they were all good. They were all shastric. Bhavatitu danushushuma. What is it? Narake niyatamba sho bhavatit anushushuma. This I've heard from authority, that those who destroy family traditions dwell always in hell. Pretty good arguments. Arjuna was giving first class, but it was in the lower tier. See, Krishna's, at the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's introducing a whole other dimension, a whole other realm of deliberation based on transcendence. In that sense, Arjuna, you're a fool, because you're not taking into account the ontology. You're not taking into account what really exists and what doesn't. Plus the fact that, you know, I happen to be God and I'm, you know, right in your chariot, you know. Hello, you know. You're getting a little bit distracted here with all this ethical stuff. Okay. So, but at the same time, they asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we know someone's a devotee or someone's your follower or disciple? And what did Prabhupada say? He would be a perfect gentleman. Prabhupada didn't say, well, you can tell he's my devotee or our, you know, devotee of Krishna, because he'll be jumping up and down and he'll be running around like a madman and he won't be caring for public opinion outside. That's, what was that? That's supposed to be the most important verse. And that was later. I want to write that down, and I want to write it on a card and try to learn it with my feeble, aging neural connections in the brain. That verse, the context of that verse in CC was Lord Chaitanya was assuring Sanatana Goswami that his consideration that his bodily sores, which he wanted to kill himself, he was so mortified that Lord Chaitanya would embrace him. Lord Chaitanya said, no, this good and bad is all mental concoction. And for me, it's nectar. It's not like Lord Chaitanya was weird or something. He just loved his devotee so much that the body itself, he didn't see the external aspect. So, this being said about the unreality of good and evil, we can say, we still need to act in terms of dharma in this world. Not that we run around crying, okay, I just said that. Incidentally, we share this two-tier understanding of both ontology as well as ethics with the impersonalists and with some Western philosophers, respectively. I'm kind of repeating what I said. Without Krishna, this all so-called real things are merely illusory phenomena, designations. Today's verse alludes to the Chaturshlok, and also what I'm trying to express here also alludes to the second, is it? Anything seen without connection to me, it's just my illusory energy. Maya, what does Maya mean? That which is not. If it's not connected with Krishna, then it's just, may seem like a cause. It may seem like a very important dynamic principle in this world. But if it's not connected with Krishna, that same cause is also an effect of an earlier, that we're going to get to in a moment. I don't want to jump to them. Okay. Similarly, all considerations of good and bad lack substance in the ultimate issue, yet various philosophers, including the highly skeptical David Hume, simply could not deny the obligation to act and think in terms of morality and ethics. The point is that we can't jump to that platform, and we have to set, quote, good, unquote, examples. Of course, in terms of ontology, the Mayavadis completely misapply the two-tier concept. That's a discussion. Returning to our current topic, I had my current topic of the relationship between causality. For me, it's the crux of what I'm trying to propose in this class. Returning to our current topic, I had mentioned that Krishna reiterated to Uddhava the same Siddhanta concerning reality versus unreality that he had taught to Arjuna, Nashato Vijate Bhavo, the same ontology. What is real, what is not real, what is existing, what is not existing, depends on whether it's eternal or not. It's very simple. But then Uddhava takes it to the next level in the Uddhava Gita. We notice we get to the 11th canto, things become more complex and more detailed. So in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna, as we say, takes it to the next level. He does this by bringing together both meanings of the opposing pairs of sat and asat, namely existent and non-existent, as well as cause and effect. Krishna makes it clear that effects lack substance, while causes correspond to what is actually real. However, in the material world, I'm reading my own writing here. However, in the material world, various types of causes themselves figure as effects and are thus also insubstantial in the ultimate issue. As we mentioned and quoted, this is a comment. I mentioned this as a comment in yesterday's class. And I won't read the Sanskrit as we're running out of time, but I'll just read the translation to this verse, which, like for me, in my attempt to try and understand what's going on, I felt like I struck gold when I found this verse. It's also 11th canto. It's the 28th chapter, text 21. That which did not exist in the past and will not exist in the future also has no existence of its own for the period of its duration, but is only a superficial designation. In my opinion, this is Krishna speaking, Whatever is created and revealed by something else is ultimately only that other thing. So what happens here? You get to Bhagavan. Okay. Bhagavan Ivetara, that one. Okay. So this is amazing in that it kind of brings everything together here. That the something is really only what caused it or what revealed it. This is a proper use of reductionism, reducing something to what's the underlying principle of it. But then that underlying principle is also dependent upon something else. These are the material causes and effects. And you go on and on and on and on and on. And you get to something called the cosmological argument for God, that finally you have to get to sarva karana karanam. Or they may just say the cause of all causes. Otherwise you have an infinite regress, which is not allowable in logic. So you have to finally come to the basis of everything. And Krishna announces very clearly that he is the basis of everything in Bhagavad Gita and other places. And there's no truth superior to him. So, because this cause and effect relationship is relative. And cause is also an effect. But you finally get to a cause which is not an effect, but which is independent. Avidya, especially spadat. With this verse, I believe we have struck gold. It implies the proper use of reductionism. It also provides another angle of vision regarding oneness seen by the Uttama Bhakta, the noumena as opposed to phenomena, and the urgent substance instead of shadow, and the urgency to transcend the limits of sense perception. Okay, regarding personal and preaching application, one way that today's philosophical instruction, I hope that's what it was, applies to ourselves is that it puts us in our place where neither the center nor the owners nor the real controllers of the cosmic manifestation nor even of this planet and regarding the principle of causation, we're not the independent cause, not by a long shot. All right, we do rate a place in the list of the five factors of action. But we figure as one of the, so to speak, incidental contingent causes, completely dependent on the actual doer, the cause of all causes. It's Daivam is described, Daivam, Shaivatra, Panchamam. But the five causes, ultimately the supersoul. Ultimately, very important word, ultimately the supersoul. And more immediately, it is actually the material nature which functions as the cause of all material causes and effects. Yet this nature leaves us enough rope with which to get pulled to safety or to hang ourselves. For we, the living entities, are identified as, quote, the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. So that's how we enter into the equation as a cause. We are the cause. You make your bed, you sleep in it. You wanted to enjoy such a drive a car in this way, then okay, you can get a car of a hog, if that's what you really want. Some people may think Krishna's too kind, but no, he respects our limited independence. And that's how we're a cause. That's where our limited independence kicks in. We can either try to transcend or we become whatever. Yet this nature leaves us, okay, that much cause we are, exclamation point. Nevertheless, we don't really own even, quote, our action, but rather merely figure as one of the five causes, the ultimate of which is the supersoul. Okay, what are the five causes? The place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the supersoul. These are the five factors of action. Now, of all those kind of causes, the real cause is God. This further explains the rigorous, so to speak, job definition explained by Lord Krishna to Arjuna. In case anyone's getting nervous, we're really in the home stretch here. Just another couple of minutes. Thank you. Explained to Lord Krishna to Arjuna in 247, which includes the heads up that neither Arjuna nor the rest of us jivas are ultimately the cause of the results of our activities. Bhagavad Gita 5.14 is even more pointed in this regard. Quote, "The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature." But we won't forget what we discussed with some detail about how the modes of material nature, or Durga Devi, also finally depends on Sarva Karana Karana. Conclusion, Jai. Although there are various causes, it is not a level playing field. I did mention it. It is the daivam of the list given at 18.14, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 14, that is unique. The uncaused cause, the only, so to speak, quote, pure cause. Why pure? Because it doesn't also figure as an effect. And therefore, according to Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, really and truly exists. We're talking about the relationship between causality and existence, you see? So something is a pure cause, or someone is the pure cause, there's only one, then that actually is the only truly existing entity. Now, this doesn't mean that there's no variety and that Krishna doesn't expand. Our actual existence is part and parcel of that one, only, unique, existing Sat entity. All right, what else? Anything else here? Uncaused cause, so to speak, the only pure the real side. Srimad Bhagavatam makes it clear, 10.4.27, persons with a vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities of lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busy counteracting, because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. I think this sums it up. Any discussion? Prabhu, is that Tamahara? You have my reading glasses. Let me change glasses. How do you go?
Hare Krishna. I really appreciate just an appreciation, I guess, more than anything for such a well-planned, thought-out philosophical discourse, which more than makes up from your spontaneous the other day.
Variety is the mother of enjoyment.
Which was also good in its own way, by the way.
I'm sorry, again?
That was also very nice in its own way, too. So okay. I think both are appreciated. And I just found it really interesting the way you describe how the Srimad Bhagavatam really is the answer to these philosophical questions of causality, of ontology, what is reality, and you even started to move a little bit into the philosophical areas of ethics and I think even logic you mentioned. And so if you all like this, Monday's verse continues and we'll also cover another philosophical realm of epistemology, or how do we know what is knowledge, what is real learning. So the Bhagavatam really is the most philosophically complete literature that we can find.
Covers all the bases, all the different categories, philosophical categories. Someone else? I think Madan Mohan.
Without Chaitanya Charitamrita, I find not satisfied with all this cause and effect, whether it's efficient cause or instrumental cause or ingredient cause. In chapter 4 Adi Lila, it says, Ichha Shakti Pradhan Krishna Ichha Sarva Karta Yana Shakti Pradhan Krishna Vasudeva Adhishtata Kriya Shakti Pradhan Nama Sankarsan Prakrita Prakrita Jagat Karana Nirman. The whole breakdown, the cause, origin cause, is Krishna who desire to enjoy more. So Prabhupada put in the purport, Eko Bahusam, he desired that, and Srimati Radharani started.
The one became many because he wanted to enjoy. How can you enjoy one? You have to have many.
That's the root cause of all causes. And then...
That's the root cause of all...
Causes.
Causes.
And then Jiva Goswami Pad further break down on Shiram Jata Dati Vikara Vishesha Yogat in Brahma Samhita, that origin desire Krishna has, because he is a Ichha Shakti Pradhan. He is above Balaram. He's above of any other incarnation on basis of these two things. That he is the Rasika of all Rasa, no other incarnation can be. And he gives a thoroughly like Siddhantastu Abhedopi Srisha Krishna Sarupaya. He's bringing all this poem to establish his poem that Krishna is the origin Rasika. He is the most expert to taste the transcendental love of.
That was one, and then there's another one.
And another one is that his desire predominates all other desires. Even Balaram, for 1 year, he did not know how is what happened for this Brahma Vimohan Lila. Mm. It is Krishna who actually desires. So Jiva Goswami, he further gave an analogy on this, that extreme incessant attraction for each other, Radha and Krishna, is the origin cause from which descended slowly to material world as that Kama Bija became the lust. The lust is the root cause here in the material world, is nothing but the reflection of the origin cause of between them.
Adiras.
Yeah, Adiras. Yeah.
So we have the tattva and the rasa, they meet at the top, so to speak. Okay, anything else? Give him the microphone.
But I want to go back to something you said earlier.
Surrendered soul. Your name is Mahabhuti?
Okay. Yeah, Mahabhuti, the last one.
You have a question? Or?
Anyhow, you were saying that, and I didn't hear after what I heard. But you were saying that that Krishna doesn't have a direct hand in anything that goes on here with the living entity in the material world, that the three gunas take over and everything. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, Krishna, unless we're trying to become Krishna conscious, and Krishna leaves us under the control of Durga Devi. In terms of the three modes of material nature, and then
but they can't act willy-nilly either. They still
they
have
can't
to have
what?
A cause.
They can't
act on their own. They
right,
still
of course
have to
not.
Have the cause.
Right,
which
right.
is Krishna.
But we have to always remember that we don't blame Krishna for that, because in chapter 5, text 15, nadate kashichit papam chayava sukritam vibhu. That I'm not responsible for the sinful nor the pious activities of the living entity. Those who are in ignorance, they may think that I'm responsible, but that's just due to ignorance. I'm not responsible. And you were in the kitchen, so you probably didn't hear, but we did quote verse that where Purusha Sukha Dukha Nam, that we're the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world that we experience. We get the blame because we have a little limited independence. Of course, it's the whole topic. It's so many ramifications of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, it's getting a little late. I think Madame Mohan wants to have the last word. Krishna Keshav is walking so slowly.
I was just thinking of a couple other verses that, like that 13.5 where it's
oh, yeah,
explained
everything. I would have liked to get into that one, yeah.
With reason to cause and effect, the whole Vedanta philosophies explained like that. And then you had quoted 2.9.34, Ritam, but I also thought of the one right before.
You can only do so much in one class.
That he existed before. He exists now.
Yeah, today's verse is like echoing that first verse of Chaturshloki. He's the one that existed even before. He'll be the one that, after it's all gone, he's the one who remains. Of course, he's remaining, but he's not alone. Like Obahu Sham, there's a lot going on there in transcendence. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya, Gantarāja Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki jāya, Gopinamana ki jāya.